A quick peek out the front window told her the media had not given up interest in her. Vans from all the local TV stations were parked across the street, their dish antennae standing at attention. The radio car Kovac had promised sat at the curb in front of the house, like a very large guard dog. This wasn't the first time in her career Carrie had needed police protection. Her life had been threatened more than once when she had been prosecuting gang murders. Going head-to-head with gang criminals and their sleazy attorneys was not about winning friends. Sitting on the bench was no different. A criminal trial always ended with one side unhappy, angry, bitter. The judge was considered a friend only by the winning team. Turning away from the window, Carrie noticed for the first time that the house was silent. No TV blasting Saturday morning cartoons, no sounds of people having breakfast. It was early, but Anka was an early riser, and Lucy was never far behind her, even on the weekend. She opened the bedroom door and listened. She could smell coffee, but it was so quiet she could hear the downstairs hall clock ticking. The door to Lucy's bedroom was open. She could see a corner of the bed already made. The door to Anka's room was closed. Carrie knocked softly, but got no answer. She checked in the guest room, expecting the bed to be torn asunder. David had never made a bed in his life or picked up a shirt or a sock. He left her room looking like it had been ransacked by thieves. There was no sign of his having been in the room at all. "Hello?" she called down the stairs. The house was empty. Everyone had gone, just left her without a word, probably assuming she would want to sleep in. Even knowing that was the logical explanation, Carrie felt apprehension and anxiety swell inside. Residual effects of the attack. Irrational fear, even while in a safe environment. The sense of dread that the people she loved were in danger and would be hurt. The fear that she was alone and her attacker would come back. "I'm coming to get you, bitch." The memory of that low, menacing voice was like a finger tracing down the back of her neck. Carrie shook off the sensation and slowly, carefully, painfully descended the stairs to the first floor. In the den, she found evidence of David. He had spent the night on the love seat. A gold chenille throw was lying on the floor, a heavy crystal tumbler, empty save for a desiccated wedge of lime, sat on the end table, without benefit of a coaster to protect the antique that had belonged to her father. Carrie picked up the glass and rubbed a thumb over the damp stain it had left. The glass had held gin. The slightly sour, astringent smell lingered. She was the one who had been beaten and threatened, and he was the one drinking. Exhausted from what little she'd done, Carrie sat down in the leather executive's chair behind David's desk. The silence of the room rang in her ears, and dizziness swooped back in and around her head like a flock of sparrows. She waited it out, focusing on the items on the desk. The IBM flat-screen monitor, the telephone, the notepad. During one of her wakeful moments in the night, she had thought she heard David talking to someone. The memory came back to her now, and she wondered if it had really happened or if his voice had been part of a dream. Who would he have been having a conversation with at 3 in the morning? Had Kovac stayed that long? She didn't recall his voice, only her husband's. She looked more closely at the notepad on the desk. David was a nervous doodler when he was on the phone. The top sheet of the pad was clean, but with some indentation marks. She couldn't make out any words. But lying on top of the garbage in the leather trash container beside the desk was a wadded up piece of the same paper. There was no hesitation. Carrie felt no twinge of guilt. She reached into the trash and retrieved the note, handling it with the same detachment she would have used as a prosecutor, examining evidence.